Welcome, friends, to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper in our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. The one who holds the chorch key is your host. Get ready for your ears to go on a trip with your favorite group of friends.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Friends That Carry On. We're a group of friends that love to travel together across this wonderful globe of ours. So this week, we are going to be talking about Marrakesh.
Woo!
Nice, right? The wonderful Morocco.
Africa.
So, you know, and again, so you guys are listeners, we know we always have our tchotchke. So one of the things that for this week, the tchotchke that I have is, I don't even know how to really describe it, other than maybe a candle holder.
Yeah.
So, and we'll get into this when we talk about parts of it, but it came, it's throughout the Medina in Morocco, and they're everywhere.
That you hang.
Well, I have several. Don't you remember the bag I have?
Right,
we know that. But yeah, so anyway, it's a little candle holder. It's handmade of some type of metal. Yeah. Crafted, but it's really cool with all the little holes in it. It gives great light, but it's just kind of unique. Never seen anything quite like it. So that's kind of the tchotchke of today. So, with that, let's introduce the cast of friends we got with us. We got coming from wonderful sunny California.
Jim Reed. Hello, hello.
Yeah, and in the wonderful Friends That Carry On studios.
I have Jim Scott.
Eric Fargo.
And, of course, myself, Tony Price. So welcome, everyone, and let's just get right into good old Marrakesh. So we talked about, you know, kind of this one epic trip for our friend Jim's birthday, what they call it, the James Bond episode that wouldn't end. So our next to the last leg, which was kind of our layover in Amsterdam, was a week in Marrakesh, specifically, right. You know, in Morocco there, in Marrakesh. But anyway,
in July.
Yeah. Well, it's always hot.
Yeah. Right. Well, during Ramadan.
Yeah. We're leaving Barcelona. Right. And we flew into the wonderful airport there in Marrakesh, and I don't know how to specifically pronounce it. I know the call letters are RAC, but flew Ryanair. I think we all flew Ryanair, didn't we?
Yeah,
I think
yes.
So. You know, what a fabulous airline.
My first experience with Ryanair, to be honest with you.
I do remember that the flying in was pretty cool. You know, a lot of landscapes are really cool, but that was the first time I've ever actually been on that continent of Africa. So mm-hmm. I don't know about everybody else, but that was kind of unique flying in and getting to see the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, you could see the mountains and the desert, and it was just really unique. And then that was a cool airport experience. What did you think about that, Jim?
This Jim? I thought it was pure chaos. I remember getting there not knowing what to expect. And like typical of a lot of airports, the locals geared up into one line. You know, if you're from Morocco, you went this way. And if you were anywhere else, you went to the right. And the line in the left kept moving. Ours didn't move for, about 45 minutes?
Yeah, I felt like
they were processing nobody.
Yeah, it was crazy. I thought, and it was chaos. There was people yelling. It was all kinds of stuff. But it was definitely unique. But other than that, I thought the airport experience in and out was pretty famous. I mean, I thought once we kind of got through, kind of walking out to get our cars was kind of a unique.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, I thought the airport, though not large, was very modern. It had an architecturally very modern take to it. It was a little chaotic getting through customs. But then when you're in this modern world or whatever inside the airport and you step out and it was like stepping into the late 1970s. All the cabs were this tan and were somewhere in the late 1970s to maybe 1980 model Mercedes. I'd say 80% of them were. For a few that were more modern. It was just crazy seeing and all. It's not like one or two. It's the whole.
It's a whole parking lot full of them.
Yeah.
And then, you know. Did we all pile into? No, we had two different cabs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Eric, you want to comment on that wonderful cab ride?
Man, heading into that city is quite an experience via cab ride in the front seat. I can tell you that. I think I was in the front seat of that one. I don't remember, but I remember being pretty hectic because they go any which way and all over the place. And I could be glad. I was glad I wasn't driving.
I should edit that film and put it up on the. On the website.
Yeah. Oh, you
I actually filmed that.
Oh.
Jim, I don't know if you remember. I ran my camera, my phone, and I was sitting by the window and just was curious. I didn't know what kind of sights we were going to see because the airport the southwest of the city. So you have to kind of come in, you go by several of the parks till you get to the old town, the Medina. And I just ran it. And when I went back and looked at it, I was like, wow, I kind of forgot some of the craziness.
Oh, kind of,
you know, just kind of random stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But cool adventure, I thought, though, coming in from the airport. Again, to, I think for all of us, a different, I guess, culture and world that we'd never been to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not seeing camels on the street corners or the road corners, not so much the street corners.
Well, the driver did take us right to our tunnel.
That was the other thing, or whatever you want to call it, right, Jim? Yeah, so going into this thing, and unfortunately, our good friend Terry, who booked our React for us, is wandering around Portugal somewhere right now, so I'm not really going to feel bad for him at all at this stage, but he's missing out hanging out with us. But anyway, he booked this Riyadh, and I honestly, when he said this Riyadh, I was like, what the hell are you talking about? What is a Riyadh? I concept of this until I started looking them up, you know, and it looked fabulous from these pictures. You know, we've all been deceived occasionally by pictures. I was thinking, okay, but then when the cab dropped us off, when you look at the map, I don't know if you realize, Jim, that street actually went on through, and it goes to right into the Medina, but they had it blocked off.
Right.
So they just unloaded us. And, of course, then we had to make this, what do we call it, three block maybe?
Well, we had to meet our guy first.
Yeah,
We had to meet our guy.
And they walked us through, you know, we're stepping over
people
sleeping and cats and around a couple corners and under a bridge.
Oh, and the aisleway or the roadway or path kept getting narrow. Each time we made a turn, it got a little more narrower and a little darker.
Yeah.
It really did feel quite sketchy. I rarely have, worries going into a place, but yeah, that wasn't the first time on that trip that I looked at Terry and I said, what have you gotten us into, T?
Well, and then you got the smell of cat.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you got that getting stronger, and the
and in and out of the shadows.
Yes.
It messed with your eyes, and I can remember not really being able to see, and almost stepping on a person that was lying there sleeping.
He was sleeping under the bridge.
An elderly lady. I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel really bad, but I can't see through these narrow passageways and the shadows. And
of course, a lot of that sleeping on the street was because we were in the middle of Ramadan. Right. And these people basically didn't eat from, you know, half an hour before the sun came up in the morning until night. So they, you know, didn't have a whole lot of energy, and you just have to sort of conserve it.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. So we take this walk, right? And then I remember we opened this gigantic door, which led to another door, and we opened it up, and even that little entryway was just kind of like dark and wasn't very tall. And then we turned that corner and went into the courtyard. I think we all looked at each other and was like, wow, I really didn't see this coming.
Right. It was truly like an oasis.
It was a little three-story castle right in the middle.
Yeah, so for everybody, for our listeners, I mean, this place was – so Riyadh literally is kind of almost like a hotel accommodation that is your
large
own
house. Yeah.
And ours was three stories with a central courtyard. It had a soaking pool kind of right in the center. Right. And there was bedrooms on each, well, I guess on the second and the third floor. And then it went up to the
top.
We had like a little rooftop area, which was spectacular because you could see really across the entire old town.
See good and bad things.
The whole Medina, really.
Yeah.
Most of it.
Yeah, so we had what? Do we have 11 people there or 8 people, 9 people there?
There would have been like nine
right? But so it gives you just an idea of how large the place was. We had 9 of us all.
We weren't on top of each other at all.
No.
The other unique thing is I think this was kind of an option. I don't know how else to refer to this, but we had a house guy and a house lady.
Sure.
We didn't have them full time because we knew we were going to be out and about a good bit. But that was our guy who kind of helped take care of us. Our lady helped. She made us what? How many meals we have? What?
At least three or four.
Yeah.
That opening meal I remember was spectacular. Yes.
The owner of the Riyadh had contacted us and said, you're coming in the middle of Ramadan. A lot of the restaurants aren't going to be open. Would you like us to provide a cook so you can have somebody make some meals for you? And we're like, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, when we sat down, I really felt, I felt like I was VIP or something.
Oh,
yeah.
Those dishes,
yeah,
they rolled out in the presentation.
Genuine. They did cook them in the tangine, the traditional, right?
Yeah, it was spectacular,
it was awesome.
I thought. The other thing I remember, too, when we got to that rooftop, you know, obviously a very Muslim country, but I counted, there was 8 minarets that you easily see. I had to go back. I actually did this by our pictures. And I counted 8 different minarets from the pictures.
Wow.
And I just remember, too, when they would do the call to prayer, and just they were coming from all the different speakers, and it was just kind of mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. Just like kind of listening to it. I mean, that was throughout the city, but I remember that first time sitting up on top was pretty cool, though.
Well, that, and you had the call to prayer going out, and then as the sun was setting in the evening, it was, at least if you're looking in the proper direction, it was beautiful. Of course, if you look to the other side, and if you can picture a Jason Bourne movie where he's jumping from rooftop to rooftop and the barbed wire, we saw that too. So
yeah, that was pretty wild. I saw those in the pictures. I guess that was up in Tangiers, the movie. But yeah, so they lined the tops of the walls and just put broken glass on the inside of the concrete so people were jumping over. But that was pretty cool, though. What else do you guys think about on the Riyadh side of it?
Well, I just the whole concept, because it's obviously you're in Morocco. It's hot, so it's concrete or stone with plaster. But that made it cool in your rooms. I mean, I guess that's their cooling method. But it was still hot. Definitely 110 to 120 every day. Mm-hmm. So walking up Medina and then hopping in that cooling pool was incredible. And to have 7, 8, or 9, you know, middle-aged, overweight guys in there cooling off, it wasn't a pretty picture, but it was needed and relaxing. It did the job.
That's one of my fondest memories, sitting there in that plunge pool with Eric playing Bob Marley's greatest hits, just rising up to the 3 stories in our Rio.
Create memories.
I do remember, too, thinking, it was like, wow, it's kind of cool that all these, you know, Riyadhs have these little pools. And then after we spent a day or two there, we realized, well, this is just really a necessity because midday, you have
to. Where else do we have to be? Right.
It's just too hot to be anywhere else other than there. So, yeah, so again, the other great thing, I guess, the spot that Terry picked, I mean, we were only 3-minute walk at best. Yeah. We were right on the edge of the Medina.
The rooms were really cool. They were like mud huts.
Yeah, it's all kind
of. It was really nothing like I'd ever been in before. The shower was mud hut. Everything you could combine together. It didn't matter if water got out, you know.
It's like you're in Flintstone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they were all just kind of molded
and super comfortable. And my air conditioning worked. Sorry, Jim.
Yeah, my air conditioning worked the first few nights, but we slept up on the roof and got caught a breeze here and there.
And got to know each other a little better.
That's right.
They really are the kind of rooms that you could sort of imagine thousands of years ago when you know, humans were first creating places to live out of things like adobe that were, you know, just in the side of a cave. This is what you would sort of build, something like this. It's absolutely prehistoric in some ways.
It was.
It is absolutely an experience I have yet to have again.
Yes.
Really.
Nothing like it. And the other thing I remember, which it was throughout the entire city, but was very noticeable in the home, was the artistic level of the mosaics. Was just, and the colors.
Arches.
I mean, those azure blues and yellows and golds. And man, just the colors were just fantastic. I got so many pictures of just random things just because of the color and the and just the texture of things. It was just amazing. So, yeah, so speaking of the Medina, so that's the center, right? I think that's the definition, Old Town.
Yep.
I forget the, Jim, do you remember the pronunciation of the actual center there, that park?
Was it the Gemma Alfina?
That's it.
Is that Jim Alfina?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the center open market area. And then all the sooks, you know, and the alleyways kind of surround around that. But wow, what an interesting place.
Wild, wild stuff. I was looking through my pictures getting ready for the podcast today. And it's like, you know, the first picture I pull up has a guy on a little tiny 1940s looking motorcycle with a monkey on his lap.
I feel like instantly in an Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
Like, where is this guy coming from with a monkey?
I have a really good photograph of a snake charmer.
Yeah, didn't you have to pay that guy?
I'm sure I did. That is probably what we should tell viewers about these snake charmers and how to go about dealing with them, because they will, some of them will kind of force themselves, not really force themselves, but they can feel that way. It's an interesting, if you look at them, they're going to maybe put a snake on you. Or
not just any snake, a cobra most likely.
Right, yeah. And you have to pay to get it off. You got to be careful. But if you're going to take photographs, just offer to pay. And you'll be, you know, no big deal. And they'll take pretty much coinage, whatever you hand them. But
and it's okay not to, you know, come close to it, not to feel like you have to do it, because it's a fairly unethical, it is an unethical thing. They wire they either wire the cobra's mouth shut or they pull its teeth. So basically a death sentence for the cobra.
Right.
I do remember, too, that it was so amazing to watch the transition of the park, for lack of a better term, I guess, the central area there from morning,
the plaza
until the night.
Oh, right. They did transition.
One of the craziest things, and this would be a psychologist or a marketer's great case study. So how do you put 14 different orange juice trucks side by side, no difference in them,
not a
and determine difference. Which one of those positions is the best marketing position? Because I remember, I think Jim
seven Scott, on one side and yeah, seven back.
I know
back.
Jim Scott and I walked around that one morning and we were going, okay, there's got to be a difference, right? So we walked around and like, nah, well, they're pretty much all the same.
Just all a bunch of fresh oranges stacked up and looked exactly. Yeah. Each part looked the same.
Yeah. So for our listeners, it's literally kind of in today's world a food truck that most of us are used to seeing now, but the one side that had a built-up awning that would pop up that exposed a bar top. And then on the back side, it was just loads and loads of oranges. And they had some fresh squeezers, and they made you fresh orange juice.
And it was good.
It was spectacular, but I just don't know why there needed to be 14 of them.
All right. Yeah.
Like lines in front of all of
them.
They
were begging for you.
Oh, they were haggling, too. And what was great is listen to the one guy next to the other and tell him how much better his place was than the other one.
Your orange juice is better than his. I don't know where you got your oranges, but for some reason, I don't know what it is, man.
Yeah, so then you had all that kind of stuff going on in the mornings, and then it slowly transitioned to the food tents or whatever.
Right,
what were those called?
They were food areas.
Do you guys remember the number of the place we ended up stopping at? Because they told us 1,000
15?
Times.
I don't remember the exact number, but they went by a number, whatever their number was.
Wasn't it something that ended with like a 9, like 59, you'll be eating fine, or...
Yeah, there was something that 57 had
to go to hell, right? 57 going to heaven. I do remember that.
Yeah, they rhymed it in their broken English.
Yeah. But we walked around there forever trying to decide which one. And I guess they had yelled at us enough. We decided to sit down with it. And to this day, though, that's actually one of my favorite pictures when we got up. They invited us up, got behind them where they were cooking, and our whole group took a picture with them.
Make sure we post that.
Yeah, it was a great time. And the food was really good. I mean, it was a variety of kebabs and sausages and, of course, all kinds of different...
Did someone eat sheep's eye on that particular...
No, Jim. Yeah. I know Jim Reed and I were looking for it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, we saw sheep brain the first night when we were looking around in one stall, and we said, well, it's the first night. Maybe we shouldn't eat this the first night because nobody else was at the stall. But we'll do it towards the end, you know, so we don't have to suffer for quite as long. But then after that, we never saw it again.
Yeah. And then at night, that's when you saw all of the vendors out there with their wares. You know, obviously you had the sooks down the alleys, but everybody kind of came to that central marketplace. That's where I purchased a bunch of those little metal candle things and a whole variety of other stuff that I got. But there's a lot of cool things going on around there.
Well, the whole plaza just had a real energy to it. It just came to life.
Yeah.
Who are those guys? Remember, there was somebody that had like a hat on with big twirling things at the end, and they just twirl their head around like a dervish and make the thing, you know, sort of dance in the air while music played. It was just, you know, really a carnival.
Yeah, that was definitely a carnival atmosphere.
It was.
I mean, because they're running after you to get in, whether it's the food or whatever the sook is to buy their rugs or their whatever it might be. They're selling spices, all kinds of stuff. I remember, and as a bald-headed guy, now I have no resemblance to Bruce Willis whatsoever. I'm an overweight, middle-aged guy. But they just kept saying, hey, Bruce Willis, come in here, Bruce Willis.
Finally, what was it? Yeah, it is Bruce Willis. Yeah, you're damn right it is.
Well, then I guess and one of the things that Marrakesh is famous for it is the souks, right? And I guess the most literal translation of that is what, Arab market?
Yeah.
Defined, and it is a labyrinth.
Wow, you can get lost. Absolutely.
I don't know how you not get lost.
Right, there you go.
I bet you people that work there get lost.
Yeah, and that's the hook that they can put on you. You have to be careful of them. They will work together with just to get you to go to a certain their brother's place, or their nephew's place, or their come see my whatever. And
well, didn't we? We had some kid do that back from.
It absolutely happened.
Because we were trying to get back from where that I don't know if it was a mausoleum or whatever. It was that museum type thing. We're trying to get back, and he's, "Oh, I take you."
Right, so we ended up in the one place. Yeah.
And it just kept going on forever, and then it got a little sketchy for a while.
What's really neat? So I did do some research prior to this episode, not before we went, because I was truly lost when we went. But I was just kind of fascinated how that all came about, and obviously this is all from trading days, and with especially in Marrakesh, and I guess they have one of the largest collection of souks, I think, anywhere. It started with just because it was trade routes. And you get Marrakesh being the center of Morocco and kind of people were coming through, either coming east for Casablanca and heading north up to Tangiers or heading further east over, heading towards Egypt. That was just kind of a general place of trading. And then it started getting more and more of the day-to-day kind of stuff that started being, and it just kind of grew from there. And now it's just absolutely amazing. So, and even having broken up, it's kind of funny. When you first go, you feel like it's just this crazy hodgepodge of everything. But then after, I guess we spend a week there, you realize they have sections. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was the leather section where most of all of the areas were leather products.
The metals,
tiles where you can buy the tangines and the bowls. There was the spices.
Dates. Olives.
Yeah. Of course, Berber. Carpets, rugs, my goodness, some of the most amazing things in there. So they do have this, iced out, but wow, it reminds me of the canals in Venice. I mean, straight line.
Right.
One leads to another, and there's 35 different angles you can take. So one of the things I did remember towards the end that I finally started to figure out was the very large minaret. I won't pronounce this right, but it's Kutubia?
Mm-hmm.
The mosque that was right by where our Riyadh was, and it's like one of the largest ones. So it was kind of my beacon. Mm-hmm. So whenever we came out from under a cover of one of the souks, I would look up and say, "Okay, I know roughly where I'm at."
And didn't it have a weird advertisement on the side of the wall? I remember that. I remember a weird advertisement.
But yeah, as far as the souks, I mean, it was amazing to me, just the stuff you can buy. And I literally bought another duffel bag to load up all the stuff. I just remember standing in line too at the airport going, "Oh, I forgot I'm on Ryanair. I am so screwed. They're never going to let me on." I didn't want to pack that or check that stuff because I was afraid they'd just destroy it. That bag must have weighed 75 pounds. Standing in line, I thought my shoulder was going to fall off. And I remember squeezing beside Jim and I was trying to hide in between him and Teresa, just hoping that the gate attendant wouldn't see my bag.
Hey, he stuffed it with like plates and platters.
I had bowls. I had tangines. I had these ornate, I don't know what you would call them. They're kind of decorative things that go around like an outdoor candle on the wall that you hang, plus all those little metal, candle things and spices. I had all kinds of stuff. You think I was open a shop when I got home.
They want you to barter. They disrespect you if you don't barter. So they want you to barter, but negotiate. I'm sorry, my bad.
The moment that I really remember in the souk was, I think it was the kid you said who, helped us find our way back from the madras and from the one museum, kept saying, "Dad, come by my uncle's store." Do you guys remember that? We went in there and we said, "Okay, we'll listen to the spiel. What the heck?" And so I just have this vivid image of all of us sitting there gathered together, crushing up. There was a lot of spices and we were smelling them. And the next thing I know is the woman in there said, "Do you want a massage?" And I think I was the first one to volunteer. sat down, and the next thing I know, she was taking my shirt off and putting some kind of weird eucalyptus burning thing all over my chest. And a 10-minute massage. It was actually kind of cool, but for a while there, I didn't know what was going to happen. And then she did that to all five of us, you know, a bunch of big Americans sitting in there in the middle of, you know, public with our shirts off getting massages. Seemed quite an experience.
You think?
Yeah. It's probably not one that many people have.
And that eucalyptus was strong, wasn't it, Jim?
I don't think it was just eucalyptus. I don't know what else was in there, but it was, you know, a real paste of something that opened up every pore.
The right. colors from in there is what I thought was so impressive. I kept taking pictures of just the walls of all the spices just because of the immaculate colors of everything.
I was looking through the pictures from that, too, and I'd forgotten that they were playing, of all things, Joan Baez when we went in there. Diamonds and Rust. It's like, how do you even bring all these things together?
Totally forgot that. Wow.
That's why we trust you to do that. Bring it all together, brother.
Yeah, and then, so, the other thing, when we were wandering around, I remember us was talking about, you know, our guide had told us, you know, that most of the restaurants, even, you know, and there's a handful, I guess, of Americanized restaurants and bars, because there's not a lot of alcohol. They said there was one open, and we were going to find it. And I remember we walked around quite a long time,
right,
until we finally found that place. And on that rooftop, though,
it was a great rooftop bar and restaurant, whatever it was. But before finding it, I mean, we probably went by a few times. The so-called sign was just handwritten in letters that maybe was 6 inches long and an inch high. I mean, there was just... And I know it didn't say bars in Arabic or something, so we didn't know.
We turned around like 10 times, like, it's got to be right here somewhere.
Yeah, and it was upstairs, so you had to go through a door.
Well, I remember we started to walk in, and I guess the same place was downstairs, but there was, like, hardly anybody in it, and it just didn't look too much. So we walked on up, and I remember sitting up there, like, wow, this is beautiful. I mean, had that kind of awnings with the drapery, you know, the kind of sheer drapery lining around it, and these really comfortable couches and seating, and we just sallied up into a little quarter. Yeah, and the misters.
So yeah. Did we have tea? Did I remember.
We have some tea. We had tea everywhere.
To me, that is a pretty cool Moroccan experience, because you really don't get that anywhere else. The way they pour it, and they really get extravagant about it, and I don't remember that anywhere else.
With real mint, you know, the big mint plant, the leaf jammed down in the bottom of the teapot.
It was damn good tea.
It kind of reminds me of that old saying, what do they call Moroccan tea in Morocco? They just call it tea.
Yeah. But it is quite an experience.
It really is. I mean, and I'm not a huge tea drinker, and I probably had more tea that week than I've had the last decade.
Right.
And probably the next decade coming up.
Yeah.
Unless I go back to Morocco.
Right.
But it was really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
The bar was really neat, though. I mean, they didn't have, obviously, they don't have a mixologist there.
No.
You're not going to get a crazy cocktail, but the experience was, I thought, was really awesome. Some of the really coolest sunset pictures I have are from that rooftop. Hmm. So, well, then speaking of just kind of, obviously, that's a week you don't concentrate too much on going out to the bars and consuming alcohol or anything. But we did decide that we wanted to have a little bit of beer for the room.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So we decided we're going to try to find it. And
you decided you were going to try.
Well, I'm not sure. I guess Jim Reed and I got volunteered to go get it.
Is that what it was?
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was all the three of us? Oh, yeah. It was the three of us.
Ah.
Oh, my goodness. How far did we go in a cab?
A long way.
Must have been, what, a good 7 miles or so?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Into, I guess, a grocery store?
Yeah.
Yeah, some sort of market.
So, and like a 14-mile trip to get alcohol.
Jim, didn't you have to show your passport or something to get it?
I had to leave my passport with them at the front to be able to be let into the area that had the alcohol.
The alcohol area.
Yeah, wow. So it had to be let in just to get a case of beer.
A case of beer and a couple fifths of vodka, too, if I remember correctly.
That's true. But that was hilarious, though.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still kind of a classic picture. I think, Jim, you took that of me when I carried the case of beer on my shoulder.
I love that. Yeah, that's a great picture. Coming back down those little lanes towards our Riad, just shouldering the case of beer, which didn't last that long, to be honest.
No.
But to get alcohol during Ramadan was not an easy task.
No. But an interesting. We did it.
But we yeah. did it.
Right. And I will say, though, out of respect, so obviously our hosts and our guy now who was helping take care of us, we're not drinkers at all. So we didn't even let them really touch the bottles, right? We took them, we put them away so they didn't have to see it or touch it, you know, just from respect. So that's something I would highly suggest if you're staying there to realize that.
During Ramadan.
Yeah. The other thing, what was the couple places that we went and visited? There was a museum.
There was the Madras. It was a 15th century Islam school. That's the one that had the beautiful pool and tile work on the inside.
That was awesome.
Do we want to talk about the camel rides, or is that
from another one? Slow down. We're still in Medina.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
Down Morocco.
I did not see the layout today. Sorry.
And there was also like the Museum of Marrakesh there, just sort of the history museum. So I think we did the two. We got a ticket that was good for both of those.
Yeah.
And that was a beautiful, like you said, it was a school, but kind of a church, Islam school. Yeah. And the pool, just everything was really neat. The mosaic and the doors, the big openings, and the way they've got that, I don't know how to describe it, but that Arabic kind of flow to it.
Yeah. I also remember that building had phenomenal wood carvings on the second floor.
Right.
That's right.
Those were spectacular. I mean, from an architectural standpoint, the city was gorgeous.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely gorgeous. Except I'm still mesmerized by the tiles and stuff from there.
Again, it is a photographer's dream, too.
It really is. It's hot.
It's Africa hot.
Literally. And so since we're going to move out of the Medina and kind of get out of town, I will have to say, so it's kind of funny. You know, we've been on a trip for probably 14 days at this point, and we're pretty good for the most part about eating local. And I remember we're sitting there, and just you and Teresa that went out.
Somebody else went with us.
Somebody. Next thing I know, they come rolling in with buckets of Kentucky Fried Chicken. You've had a Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Right.
I remember Teresa saying, "I just can't eat any more." Was it tan food or yellow food?
Yeah. Well, I have to say, it tasted pretty good once I had a piece. I was like, wow.
It was good KFC chicken.
But then come to find out, KFC is like one of the largest franchises of fast food internationally.
Yeah.
Not here in the States as much, but yeah. But yeah, I had to mention that. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, absolutely. Thing.
I remember the biscuits weren't very good, though. That's the one thing that disappointed me.
I don't know if I even tried a biscuit.
I don't remember the biscuits either.
Well, before we head out onto our wonderful excursion, we're going to hit our little piece that we've added is pretty unique dining experiences. Mm-hmm. So this week, Jim Reed, you're going to cover that for us. What do you got for us?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about a street food tour that I've taken twice with the group in Bangkok, Thailand. It's called Chili Paste Tours. And you can look up chilipastetours.com and look at it if you'd like to. And it's run by a local woman named Chin Chin. And honestly, it's like no other walking, moving tour I've ever taken before in a city. She takes you through about an 8-hour journey through Bangkok, in which you're going to eat not one meal, not two meals, not three meals. You're going to eat continuously for 8 hours until you're begging her not to let you eat anything else. And then she'll say, oh, but you have to try just one more little thing. You know, Bangkok can be a bit of a tough city because it's so huge, finding your way around. And knowing what to eat on the street is really difficult the first couple times. And she just does this magical job of taking you, down every little side road, street, herbalist shop, flower market, places that you'd never even think of, and introduces you to the cuisine. You know, there are things I've seen in American Thai restaurants like papaya salad or you know, som tum, which I would never eat. You know, I never was really kind of interested in it. Pie and salad, how does that go together? Well, when you end up buying it on the street there in a little tiny plastic bag, and it turns out it's the best thing you've put in your mouth in months, you know, it opens up a whole new world for you. Right. And I'm serious. These were eight-hour tours, nonstop. You know, she did take some time to take us through other things, you know, into the monastery with the golden Buddha, or at night she took us through the place where the reclining Buddha is. And, you know, she gives you a little bit of history too. But, you know, for those 8 hours, 75-80% of the time, you're either eating or going to some other place where you're going to eat again. Eric, you were on the tour, weren't you?
Yes, it was great.
What do you remember most?
I remember going late at night into the area where the restaurants buy. She took the real raw. Well, you will be eating where they buy in like midnight. Remember that?
Oh, absolutely. And at first she said, don't take any pictures. We're not really allowed in here. But then she's such a good person. She just starts talking with the people. And the next thing you know, they take you in and they treat you like you should be there. The other thing that she did that was really good is she contacts you before the tour to ask what you can and can't eat. So I have an allergy to onions, to fresh onions. And so she made sure that, you know, when she ordered every bit of food, she made sure to find a onion-free option for me, which I thought was nice. If you can't eat spicy things, you know, she'll tone it down as much as she possibly can.
I'm surprised she didn't say you shouldn't come to Bangkok.
Well, if you ask for something that's not spicy, I think that's probably, you know, what she's going to say. Although, you know, their version of spicy could use a little bit toned down, even from somebody who loves spicy food.
I can't wait then.
A real quick story. I remember the very first thing, we stepped on the street and she said, "You want chicken liver?" And I'm like, oh, my God, of course I do. What? The very first thing. And I'm like, I'm going to hold back and not eat so much. But that was the first thing she said. And I'm like, yeah, I want chicken liver.
So does she really fill you up, or is it just enough that you keep walking, then a little more? Or do you get stuffed with what she gives you?
Oh, she stuffs you early on. It's then fine. Walks you a little bit, then stuffs you again, then walks a little bit and stuffs and stuffs and stuffs.
And does she give you little, like, history tidbits or other tidbits of the town? Not necessarily be history, but just sort of flavor of the areas that you're going through. And
absolutely.
Yeah, she took us through Chinatown, talked about, you know, its nature or its history and, you know, what it stood for in the culture.
And she had the tuk-tuks ready and available whenever we needed to be up, and we were done with our, they were ready. It was one of the best tour. You will enjoy it.
Well, hey, Jim, you said you've done it twice?
I've done it twice, and both tours were distinct. One was in the Old Town area mostly. The other was spent a lot of time in the Chinatown area. So she ends up, you know, making each tour, I think, a unique experience.
That's really cool. Well, awesome.
It teaches you a lot of things that you really need to know. Like, it gets so damn hot in Bangkok. Our one friend, John Ribble, looked like he was about ready to pass out. She ducked into a 7-Eleven, and 7-Elevens are on every street corner in Bangkok. She ducked into a 7-Eleven and came out with a frozen, washcloth. Right. They sell them there for, what is it, like 60 cents, you know, to instantly cool you down. Never would have known that if we hadn't gone on the tour.
So, Jim, the 7-Elevens, do they still have an Indian cashier at all those?
No, they're Thai.
Well, Jim, thanks a bunch. That sounds awesome, and we may have to hit that when we go.
Absolutely. All right. Definitely.
Well, cool. All right, well, now we're going to move out of the city center and take on what I think all of us kind of looked at each other a little sheepishly when Terry said, "Hey, you want to take a camel ride and sleep in the desert?"
He said yes to that.
Yeah. Well, and he's not here, so we can throw him square under the camel.
We should throw him under the camel toe.
What did he say? Oh, it's about a four-hour...
Exactly,
you know
what he said.
Van ride.
It started off at 2. When he sold it to us, it was a 2-hour ride.
Yeah.
And then when we got in the vans, I think it's probably closer to 4 hours.
Yeah, if you look it up right now, they say it's a 6.5-hour ride. I double checked. I wanted to look at the tour that we did and stuff. But yeah, so either way, now I look back at it, and I would have gone if he told me it was 6.5 hours.
Right.
And it was actually 8.
Yeah. Yeah, after we did our stop and had some food.
Right.
It's a good 6.5 hours of drive, yes. They say.
Yes.
But yeah, so we all roll into a van hit across the Atlas Mountains?
Probably a 20-year-old Chevy Astro van. What, like it was brand new.
Oh, yeah, and it had a hump in the back seat, right?
That's right. The jump seat.
The jump seat,
yeah.
The back where we were, it didn't have the hump.
That's right. I mean,
you kept getting the back, and Teresa and those guys had to fight over who sat on the hump.
Diesel powered, because we were amazed how much they never filled the thing up, and we went forever and ever.
Yeah.
We're like, man, this thing must get 400 miles to a gallon.
So I want to do a quick little just synopsis of what the trip is, and then we'll kind of go back to the beginning of it and then kind of get into some details. So basically what you do is you take a van ride across the Atlas Mountains. So you get to, there's a couple of different deserts you can go to, which all of them are kind of contributories or, you know, beginnings of the Sahara Desert. So we were outside the town of Zagora. So it's the Zagoran Desert. And then you jump on a camel and about an hour ride.
About an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cross the dunes to what they call a tent city, which, you know, it's basically your accommodations. You camp for the night, and then you get up in the morning, you take your, you know, camel ride back, jump on the van, and you come back. That's basically the trip.
Or the Berber tribe. It's right. A Berber tribe, yeah. Tribesman that hosts you.
So that's the trip in a nutshell. But, so we get on the, starting off, we get in the van. So for, again, our listeners, Terry, he's scared of heights, right? So we didn't really think about it. I'm thinking driving across the mountains here, you know, in the United States, driving across, you know, the Rockies. You know, we build giant bridges to take out some of the crazy curves. Oh, not there.
No, mm-hmm. Not at all.
No guardrail.
Well, you had boulders occasionally.
Right. Give me guardrail. I do remember this. So it was considered the 10th. It's the 10th most dangerous road in the world, in the top 10. And I remember before we went, Cadillac did a commercial of this on this road. And it shows how, and I'm like, that's the road we're going to be traveling. Yay.
Yeah. And boy, those drivers, delivery trucks and our van trying to pass the delivery truck on a 2-lane road with no guardrail and I don't know how many hundreds.
6,700 feet up, 8,000 feet up.
Down. I mean, it's just like 5,000 feet down.
Couple times, usually it doesn't bother me. There were several times I had to kind of look away.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh. But I remember looking back at Terry a couple times. He had a couple different shades of green, I think, at one point. But it was a great drive. Great pictures, though. Oh my goodness, a couple stops along, and just, it reminds me of, like, I don't know, just some of the movies you would watch back in the day of Egypt and just the African, and things just cut into the sides of mountains, but all of the architecture kind of blends,
because
it's adobe, it's all built out, and it was just, and then you'd have these little creeks, and that would be your greenery, and everything within, feet of it was green. It was just.
It was funny, as you traveled along the mountains, you knew where the water was because it was the only area that was green.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we saw a lot of cool stuff. One of the coolest stops, and one of my favorite pictures of you, Eric, and how we convinced. So, you know, maybe not all of our listeners, a lot of them has heard of argan oil, you know, from the goats, right?
Mm-hmm.
That climb up into the trees and eat the berries and then
eat the seeds.
Seeds. Or the nuts.
Yep. The nuts.
Poop them out.
Yep. Pass
them out. And then they take them and then they grind them. And they don't grind them in a machine. It's basically a lady sitting around with those wheels and a big bowl.
Stone wheel.
And they grind it and they made argan oil, argan
peanut butter.
It's like argan butter.
Right. Butter. Right.
Yeah.
Anything you do with nuts. But apparently the argan oil is just unbelievably expensive to back here in the States.
Right. And Australia is all over
it. And everywhere. But so we walked into this little place and you could see the ghosts out in the trees. But a couple of ladies were sitting in the hallway doing this. And somehow Eric convinced her to let him sit at her wheel.
I don't remember how that happened.
I don't either. But
I think she asked me, and I didn't want to turn her down.
But I got a great picture of you sitting behind that thing.
It is a great photograph.
It was awesome. And I do remember, too, like right across the street, because we've been through the sooks, and I bought a couple of those bowls. I guess you would call them soup bowls, serving bowls. You know, they're very, very, you know, they're just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a little bit more expensive there, but going on in the mountains, middle of the Atlas Mountains, I snapped this picture, and I looked at the picture, and I'm going, that bowl looks awesome. I'm going to go over there and see how much that is. Well, it was It was cheaper than the little ones that I bought back in, in Marrakesh. So
that's why you loaded up.
That's why I loaded up. That was really cool. Then that one cafe we were, or cafeteria place that we stopped and we got a drink, great views too across the mountains.
It did. That was awesome. That was an interesting stop.
Yeah.
Are we talking about where we ate?
No, not where we ate. On the way. We haven't quite gotten there. Oh, okay. Remember that little cap
on the top? Oh, yeah, where we stopped, had something to drink, used the restrooms. And those restrooms were interesting. They were just pretty much, well, I don't remember, just a hole in the ground pretty much.
That happens a lot. And then you also, you guys remember, you know, the Atlas Mountains are just, was to me, gorgeous and nothing like any mountains.
Very unique.
I've never been to the moon, but it kind of made me feel like a moonscape.
Right, yeah, very similar to what you would think that would be, right? Yeah,
kind of a blackish rock.
And then once we got on the other side, on the desert side, heading toward, I guess, is that Algiers that's still there? Heading that direction, we saw this enormous kind of sand dunes, and then like an entrance to a movie studio.
Yeah.
It's like,
that was wild.
To find out that I guess that's where they do a lot of those films about the deserts and stuff, and
part of Game of Thrones was filmed there in Gladiator. Atlas Studios there.
Atlas Studios. It was pretty neat though. It was kind of funny, literally, when you say there's a studio out in the middle of the desert.
There was.
So we get to our cafe, we get to this star, this dining place, and we're thinking, oh, we're here. And I don't know which one of you guys saw that we sat down at this, our table. Again, we think we're at the end of the stop. And we see this tour group of people coming up. And people are crying.
Young girls teenage girls are crying. They're sweating profusely. Their hair is all disheveled.
We're like, what the hell did we sign up for?
What happened to those people, Terry? Why are they looking like that and crying coming out of the desert? What have you gotten us into?
Well, trying to find out that wasn't our tour. And hell, that wasn't even our stop. We still have 2 more hours to drive.
That was just a place to eat.
It was halfway. Well, he had this huge mural of a map up there.
Yeah.
And we're looking at it, and we see where we're at, you know, the "you are here" part.
Where are we?
And then we look over here, and where we came from, we were only halfway there.
Yeah, we said, "Where are we?" And this point's right there in the middle. We're like, we're halfway there. He's like, yeah.
Well, and then
4 more hours?
Then Tony pulled up on his Google Maps where we were, and it had stuff up to where we were, and then it just went blank the rest of the way.
They were thinking, dude, if Google hasn't mapped it yet, uh-oh.
We might not be coming back.
But anyway, so we get back and we get in our van and we head to I guess we were in Zagora. We were going to the edge of ever.
Another 4 more hours.
I do remember this, though. I don't know if anybody else got a picture of the guy. I don't think he was too happy with us. It looked like he lived in this little adobe hut carved right into it, and he looked like somebody out of a movie. I mean, and he had that snake. But he was outside the city. He was just kind of standing there.
He was along the road.
We stopped there, though. For some reason, we stopped because you had all those, like you said, the adobes into the side of the mountain, which is a good view. And he walked up with a big, big burlap sack.
I was like, what?
which
we're going to get held up by Cobra.
Burlap sack was full of snakes, and he just wanted photo ops and us to give him money,
right?
And he was pretty aggressive, but I don't think we took any pictures with it, did we?
I took a picture of him walking away. I have a photo of him walking away. I think I sent it to Joel. You get to post it after this. It's, I took a photo of him walking away.
Then we jump back in the van. We get down to where we're supposed to catch our camels. Usually it's catching a train. Now we're catching camels.
Yep.
But was it our driver that took us into the place to buy? And I forget the apologize. Does anybody remember the traditional name for your...
For the headscarf?
I don't remember.
It was like a little town, just maybe 5 minutes from where we got our camels.
You remember what they called the headgear?
Yeah, what's that called,
Jim?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But if you've seen, you know, movies set in that area, you've seen the guys with the long robes and the headgear on top. It's exactly what they did to us. They looked at each of us and found the right cloth and put them on top of our heads.
You had to wrap them around our heads properly.
I'm not sure I could do it again. I got pretty good at it that day.
No way I could do it again.
It was pretty amazing how they did that so that it would stay on. And
definitely something they learned from years and years of being and surviving in the desert.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was really kind of.
And one of the things I remember just before, as we were coming to that little town, just before we stopped to get that headgear, there was, oddly, a bank there that had a digital clock and thermometer, and thermometer 120 degrees, and this was at 6 in the evening.
Yes.
So it was 120 degrees.
It was cooling down.
It was cooling down, and we were about to go out into the desert.
Yeah, I think we gave Terry another one of those, what the hell were you thinking, Terry? We saw that 120.
And what I loved is, you know, our van pulls up, and it stops kind of where the road just ends.
Yeah.
It's like a road just... It's like a dead end. Your dead end is a desert.
The sand kind of
washes over it.
Washes over the road.
Yeah.
And we just pull over and like, oh, are those camels for us? Well, yes, they are. Those camels are for us alongside the road. Imagine that.
One hump or two.
I have to say that was a pretty wild experience.
Right. That was right.
That was pretty wild.
So get out. Get out. Okay, what do we do? But by the time I got out of the car, and somebody got my bag out of it. I think I was up on the camel within 3 minutes of walking out of the car. I'm not kidding. I was the first one up, I think.
But we got some great pictures, great videos. I think it's about an hour and a half ride.
Yeah,
come around that corner, and it was pretty impressive. I mean, there was about five guys, I think, our guides. There was about five of them, and then I counted for our pictures.
Something like that,
But they took us through. They walked us through, and the tents – I mean, they call it a tent city, but it was basically, I guess they made almost like a courtyard for us. Down each side was a row of individual tents. They each had two cots. And when I say tents, they were elaborate.
All right. Big. Burlap.
Just
layer and layer.
Decorated, too.
Right.
I mean, the rug.
No, I didn't expect it at all.
I didn't either. And then they had a big center tent, which we found out that's where we ate breakfast, I guess, the next morning. Dinner. That night.
Oh, it was open air there.
Well, that remember they had
breakfast
that little tent
morning,
in the back?
Right.
Yeah. But the most impressive part was the living room in the desert.
Oh, yeah. That's
the outdoor living room.
Yeah. So for our listeners, just imagine your living room floor with Berber carpet. Well, that's it. Just underneath was the desert.
Desert, yep.
And that was just so amazing. I mean, and they had a kind of things underneath of it to build up to make almost like a natural couch or something to lean against. And
had pillows.
It was just amazing.
Pillows.
Absolutely amazing.
Yep.
And then one of the most impressive things was their separate tent with bathrooms, solar powered bathrooms.
Yep. So you could get a shower out in the middle.
Heated water with solar power. Right. Right.
Yeah. It's just absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And they cooked us a meal, traditional meal.
Yep.
There's a Berber tribe. And then they played music for us, got the bongo, and got us involved playing the bongos and whatever.
We were playing traditional Moroccan music.
Yeah, what are those called?
Oh, no, I was beating the drum.
Oh, okay.
A little merengue or
that's
whatever.
That's the only thing I can take care of. I can hit that.
And then, there's a great picture of you, one of the tribesmen.
Right. Oh, right, yeah.
That's your buddy.
He was the one that wrapped my head and wrapped me up the next morning so I could go for our journey back. Yeah. He said, like tying a tie, you know, that's what I felt like. Like, oh, thanks, Dad. He's wrapping that thing around my head. I never wrapped that thing around my head in my life. I wouldn't know how to do it now. And he did it for me. That's what I felt like.
And I do remember too, we were thinking about getting ready to crash for the night, and we walked into the tents and they were still really hot.
Right. Yeah.
Just not a lot of air movement. So a lot of us came back, not all of us came back out because he lay there. So imagine, you know, we always talk about if you're in the country someplace around where you don't have any man-made just light to
spoil
the
sky. Light pollution.
There's zero.
Yeah,
and how many shooting stars did we see?
387,000.
Yeah. What did our guys say? It was like the land of a million stars.
Right.
Yeah,
because
beautiful.
You could see forever.
So I really didn't sleep that well that night at all, but I really didn't care. I didn't care at all. I would go to sleep. And see the star.
I remember we snuck in a bottle of vodka that we'd gotten the same place we got that beer at that grocery store, and had vodkas and orange juices. Went out, laid down on one of those pillows out in the center place there, looking at the stars. And the next thing I know, I wake up and it must be, you know, about 4 a.m. and I just completely fallen asleep underneath the stars there. And, you know, just so darn comfortable there. Just so wonderful watching that.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. And it cooled down to a pleasant 90 degrees.
I do, you know, you always have those kind of moments in time, especially on some of our trips. That was one of those that when you're, like Jim was just saying, laying there, kind of having our little of orange and vodka and looking up and just seeing all those stars and realize you're laying on the floor of the desert in Africa.
Right.
That was the moment we forgave Terry for the 8-hour ride.
It is, exactly.
Yeah, and that was just, that truly is a spectacular moment. So I would do it again.
Highly recommend it. How do you choose the right to, how do you choose the right tour place?
So I would say this. So, you know, again, following back up, this wasn't before because we kind of let Terry plan this. So when I was looking at it again and thinking, okay, well, how did we end up there? What's some other things? And just kind of reading about them, depending on where you want to go. So we end up obviously having to do a lot of backtracking. So thinking about it again, what I may would consider, and just a suggestion for an alternative itinerary, was Zagora is southeast of Marrakesh. Was if you went more to the east, the city is Merzoux, I think.
Okay.
That is really close to where the Sahara starts, but that's a 10-hour drive.
Jeez.
But some of the itineraries I saw was, if especially if you want to go out of Spain, is to go east to there, do something similar to what we did, and then head a little bit more north into Tangiers.
And
then go across at Gibraltar, and then you can hit southern Spain. So that would be an interesting little twist that's a little different. So just throw that out there. But yeah, if you want something that, unfortunately, from any place, 6 hours is about it.
If you gotta go over those mountains, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Fly over them.
Yeah, it's just
you're driving.
It is. So, you guys got anything else to think about from the excursion? I mean, that was
it was everything we just said it was. It had its trials and tribulations, but it was well worth it at the end.
Yeah, it was absolutely spectacular.
One thing I vividly remember though was our driver, who, as you said, was wonderful at driving around those curves. At one point, said, "I have to go to the bathroom. Do you mind if I stop?" And he just stopped in the middle of the road and walked out and a little bit ahead of us and basically pooped, you know, right on the side of the road with no toilet paper or anything either. So you got to sort of roll with the punches if you do something like that.
Well, you shake hands with the right hand.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. That's funny. Eric, you got any thoughts or summary for the trip that you can think of? That portion of it?
No, I mean, you guys have pretty much covered everything. Probably come to my mind later on at night when I'm sitting in bed. About this, but no, you guys covered it. It was that was the part of the epic trip. So,
yeah.
You know, we say the epic trip. Seems like every one of them is epic, okay. But that was the first epic trip.
That was a good one. Jerry, what about you? You have any highlights that you end up with?
You know, I think we've touched upon everything. Just as Eric said, what a fantastic way, you know, after surviving the bulls in Pamplona and the pickpockets in Barcelona, the whole Marrakesh trip was just, you know, how do you go beyond those other two stop places that we stopped? Well, this was it. This was just a wild ass place that I'll always remember.
You bring a memory to me now, Jim. It was planned really perfectly because we were really able to relax and take a step back after Pamplona and all the everything that goes on there and the nonstop 24/7 and able to really relax in North Africa. It worked out perfectly that way because you get there and you're like, oh, wow, we can relax. We can take a deep breath and.
You don't want to rush a trip through Marrakesh, do you? And as hot as it is, you'll just end up passing out someplace in the souks.
Yeah. Jim, what about you?
I'm glad we went there. I'm glad it got planned in the way it did because I probably wouldn't pick that initially. Now, especially back then when I was more of a newbie to the travel scene, now, I would seek out places like that. a little more frequently. But back then, I would have never considered adding that to it. But to have gone and experienced it, it was incredible, and I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, that kind of, for me as well, is one of those places that, you know, you kind of always think about, at least, I guess, should they ever, but I always have thought about it would be kind of cool to ride a camel or sleep in the desert or, you know, go to Africa or whatever, but never really thought that would happen. So, yeah, it was one of those things. I'm glad it got scheduled because I probably wouldn't have scheduled it. And,
right.
And it was. And to your point, too, Eric, after those, what, first 10 days or 12 days of going through the whole Madrid, Pamplona, Barcelona, and let's just say overindulging in food and drink and just everything, you truly could relax there. Mm-hmm. You were kind of forced to a little bit too because of the heat, but it was a nice thing. So that kind of wraps up our episode here on the wonderful city of Marrakesh. So we'd like to thank everybody, all of our listeners. We want to appreciate our affiliate. So Eric, you're going to hit our affiliate for the day. Who do you have?
Yeah, our affiliate for today is Skyscanner. Everybody loves Skyscanner. You can go to all of our, you go to our website and click on Skyscanner and book flights through there. Skyscanner is a leading global travel search site, a place where people are inspired to plan and book direct from millions of travel options at the best prices. They're unbiased and free, which means that 60 million people who use us every month can trust our comprehensive range of flight, hotel, and car hire options. Skyscanner. Check them out through our website and book something because we have many times and they alert you and it works pretty nicely, nice, I would say.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Skyscanner.
Yep. Thanks, Eric. So, again, thanks to all our listeners. Again, I want to say we're Friends That Carry On. Please check out our website at friendsthatcarryon.com. There's links to all of our affiliates on there, and please check them out. All of our blogs, you can get links directly to our podcast as well, our episodes. And, of course, we really appreciate if you could comment and, of course, follow or comment on any of the episodes. Really appreciate that. And then on all the other social medias, at Friends That Carry On. So, again, thanks, everybody, and we'll check you out next week.
Great. Have a good day.
Adios.
Super.
Be sure to join the Friends next week with another great podcast. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the Friends and other content on www.friendsthatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook by searching Friends That Carry On. Thanks again for joining us. And don't forget to carry on, friends.